Welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. We hope you're encouraged by the message and stick around for more at the end.
Well, in 1942, American and British forces suffered a stunning loss to the Nazis in North Africa. And that loss prompted Eisenhower to replace the general in command with a different one, General Patton. And Patton showed up at the Second Corps, and he realized pretty quickly that it was a problem of leadership. And so when he stepped in, the first thing he did was change the game. The men who were there at the time were doing all the things soldiers do, but sort of half-heartedly, without passion, going through the motions. And he said, that is no longer acceptable. You will shave every day, or you will face punishment if you do not. You will wear your helmet at all times. You will wear a tie. You will lace up your boots. You will get your mile time down. You will get in shape. And he just enforced a level of discipline and excellence on them that they resented at first. But then as they realized they could conquer things, they could move forward, he would give them a sense of pride and self-discipline and respect, and then he would infuse into them a passion that we're not just here to exist and live in North Africa. We're here to win a war. There's a purpose. It's in front of us. We can do it. There's a goal. We're going to get to it. And he began to infuse them with this thinking, this mindset. And so he took a defeated and devastated army, and by the end of it, they not only won their next battle, they defeated Rommel, the most decorated and talented general in the Nazi army. And then he proceeded to lead the Third Army to become the most successful military campaign in the history of the world. Now, why tell you that? For this reason, what Patton did was he stepped into this culture and he said, I'm going to change the way you think. I want to renovate your understanding of our culture here. And if you can start thinking like I think and caring about what I care about and loving what I love, that mindset is going to renovate how you live, how you behave, the decisions you make, and where you go in life. He says, I want to change your thinking. And when they absorbed his way of thinking, it completely changed their history and the world's history. Now, why do I tell you that? Because we started a series last week on what is probably the most memorized passage in the Bible, the Lord's Prayer. We've probably all said it at some point, maybe before a football game, y'all hit a knee and said it, maybe at a funeral. Maybe you come from a faith tradition where you said it on a regular basis, and we've all said the Lord's Prayer, but if we're honest, for many of us, we've just sort of repeated it, kind of going through the motions in a dispassionate way, which the irony of that is when Jesus presented the Lord's Prayer, right before he gave it to us, he said, don't pray with meaningless repetition. And yet for many of us, when we recite the Lord's Prayer, we just repeat it, and we do so without contemplating and appreciating the meaning of it. We do the opposite of what he said. But he says, no, I don't want meaningless repetition, but I want you to pray. And what's interesting about it is he says, I want you to pray like this. He doesn't say, pray this. It's not bad to pray the Lord's Prayer verbatim, but he says, I want you to pray like this. I don't want you to just say these words. I want this to be a model. Charles Spurgeon said it this way. He said, I've seen people build a lot of little models of homes. I've never seen anyone build a little model and then pack their bags and try to move in. He said, you don't live in the model. You take the model and use it to construct a home. That's what the Lord's Prayer is. It's a model. I take it, understand it, and then I build a prayer. It's not something to repeat verbatim necessarily. It's a map. If you want to be a traveler, you don't spread a map out on the floor and go, I'm in England. I'm in Spain. I'm in Australia. You don't do that. You take the map and you look at it and you let it guide you as you step out on your own adventure. And that's the idea of the Lord's Prayer. It's a map, it's a guide, and then you step out to run into your own prayer, but you're letting these thoughts shape your values. You're letting it shape what you care about. You're letting it shape what you think about. Jesus said, hey guys, I want you to talk to God. You're made to engage with him, but let me tell you what kind of values I want you to have, what kind of priorities he cares about as you engage with the Almighty. When I hire staff at Breakaway, I don't micromanage them. I don't stand over their shoulder and go, send that email now. I don't do it. But what I do care about a lot when I hire people is I want them to understand our culture. The way we are around here is we're kind to people. We pray a lot. We care a lot about excellence, but we are a low drama office. And I want them to absorb that culture. And then they're free to do the millions of different things that their different tasks require. But I've got them thinking in a way that I can shape it to make them maximally successful in our culture. And what I love about the Lord's Prayer is it's an opportunity for us to sit under the general Jesus. And he says, hey, when you engage with God and engage with your life, these are the priorities I want you to have. This is the values I want you to appreciate as you do what you're made to do, and that is engage the Almighty. And last week, we were invited by Jesus and through Jesus to address God as Father. He said, you don't have to come to him and put on a religious performance. He's not looking for a show. It doesn't matter if you don't get all the words right. He doesn't care about that. He wants you to come to him as a father, as a dad, meaning that he loves you and he's committed to your good. And then he says he's your father in heaven. That means in heaven, it's not just where he's located. That means he rules over everything. So he says, come to me as if I'm your dad and as if your dad ruled the universe. You got that? So come to me knowing I love you and I'm committed to you and I am strong enough to guide your life in a way that will work out for your good and my glory. So he says, come to me like a loving father who rules all things. That's what I want you to do. And then he moves on and we're looking at the first thing he tells us to pray about. And what's interesting about this is it's not just the first thing he tells us to pray about. It is what the prayer's about. The whole prayer will flow from this statement. And what's interesting about that is not just like, oh, that'll be interesting to know what this prayer is about. It's not only what the prayer's about. It's not only the centerpiece of the prayer. What he's about to say here is meant to be the centerpiece of your life. It's not just what the prayer's about. It's what you're supposed to be about. The first thing, the most important thing, as you do what you're meant to do, that means engage God. When you talk to him, what I want you to be caring about, thinking about, and talking about is this sentence, hallowed be your name. Now, for many of us, if we're honest, when I say that, when you say that, you don't automatically go, yes. You don't get filled with this passion of, yeah, hallowed be your name. It doesn't fill you with a passion like that. And that's maybe one of two reasons. Maybe for some of you, it's because God hasn't given you a heart to love the idea of his name being hallowed. And I'm praying that he will renovate your heart, give you a new one that does love that more than you love anything else in this life, including your own life. But for others of us, it's not necessarily that. It's a more practical problem. And it's practically this. When we say this sentence, hallowed be your name, we don't really know what it means. And so it's hard for our heart to get really affectionate about something that our mind doesn't get, you know? So we look and go, okay, I'm supposed to be excited about this, but I don't understand this because this language is so distant from our normal conversation. I mean, how many times did you use the word hallow today in a sentence? Honestly. So we've got to understand what this means. If it's the most important thing God's thinking about, Jesus is thinking about, and Jesus wants you to think about, we got to get our mind around what exactly it means to say, hallowed be your name. And so let's just look at it. Hallowed be your name. What does it mean? What is name about? Why do I care about his name? Well, quite simply this, your name, it's intimately interwoven with personhood. Your name is who you are. It's not just the collection of syllables we say to identify you. When we say your name, when people hear your name, it calls up thoughts, either good or bad, and they're thoughts about your activities, your decisions, and not only that, but your character, what you're about. Your name brings up these ideas of who you are. Your name carries the freight of your life, for good or bad. And so when I say the name Mother Teresa, you don't just hear that as a collection of letters. It calls up some thoughts, not just of things she did, but of some character traits, of some ideas, some ways of living, an essence. You get that idea. When I say Adolf Hitler, it's not just a name. It calls up some ideas, some thoughts, some ways of living for good or bad. And for many of you, you're not going to name your kid Adolf. The name's been ruined because of this guy. So any name, Abraham Lincoln, Tiger Woods, Gaga, Moses. I say different names, and not just the name, it brings up some ideas. For some of you, certain names you'll never name your kid, and there's nothing wrong with the name. It's just some other person that you know that had that name did some weird stuff. So someone will say, hey, why don't you name your kid Robert? No, I can't name him Robert. Why? Because I knew a Robert, and he smelled weird. And you're like, what does that have to do with the name Robert? This collection of letters. And you go, I'm sorry. His essence, his way of living, his character has so saturated that name, I can't separate those letters from him. And that's the same with your name. Your name is you. It's your character. It's your thoughts. It's your living, your emotions. That's your name. It's who you are at your core. And he says his name is something that we're meant to hallow. Now, what does it mean to hallow something? The word hallow is literally the word sanctify, sanctified. Same word in Greek. It's also the same word as saint, the same word as holy. They're all the same root word. And so what Jesus tells us to pray more than anything else is, I want you to pray, God's name be sanctified. Be sanctified. Now you go, what does that mean? All through the Bible, when that word sanctified is used for what God does to us, it means the process whereby God makes us holy. That God takes you and he sanctifies you by making you something pure. Purer than you were, something more lovely, more beautiful, more valuable, more precious, more separated unto him. He takes you and makes you into something more precious and valuable and treasured and holy. That's what it means when God sanctifies us. That's not what it means biblically when we sanctify God. We don't make God holy. He already is. We don't make God anything. And so when we sanctify God, it doesn't mean that we make God holy. What it means is that we want him to be regarded as holy, treated as valuable, celebrated as wonderful, given the attention and respect he deserves. That's what hallowed be your name means. I want your name, your reputation, your character, what you're about, how you think and move and what you care about to be treasured and honored and valued and celebrated. That's what I want. That's what we're saying. So when we say hallowed be your name, what does that mean? For most of us, honestly, we think we're making a statement. And it's a statement basically like, you're awesome. Or praise God. Most of us think that way. Hallowed be your name means you're great, God. You're the best. You're top notch. You know, we just think it's a statement that God's awesome. But here's the interesting thing about that. There's different moods in Greek verbs, different moods in English words too, but we won't get into grammar with English tonight. But they're very obvious in Greek. And to make a statement is in the indicative mood. That's you're indicating a reality. That shirt is red. God is awesome. You're just stating facts. And many of us think that's what we're doing here. Father, you're the best. But there's another mood called the imperative. And the imperative mood is a command. Stop. Go. Do this. Don't do it. It's a command. Or when it's said to a superior, it's a request, an entreaty, a gentle command. It's not that something is, you're asking something to be. And that's the mood of this sentence. So don't miss that. Listen to me. We are not telling God anything here. We are asking him to do something. Did you know that? We're saying, Father in heaven, make your name hallowed. Make your reputation treasured. Make people think you're incredible. Make people think you're unbelievable, you're awesome, you're valuable, you're treasured, you're better than life. God, move, do something, act. Change things. Make it so that people value and treasure and honor you the way you deserve to be. That's what we're doing here. He says, the first thing I want you to do and what I want your life to be about is begging God to move so that the world treasures, honors, values, and loves him. That's what's to be the first thing out of our lips when we think about talking to God and what our life should be about. The glorifying, hallowing, treasuring of God Almighty. Now, when I say that, that raises some questions. And for the last part of the talk, I want to answer four questions. Number one is, why would I ask him to do that? Why would I even want him to do that? Number two, what's so great about his name anyway? Number three, what exactly am I asking him to do when I say I want people to hallow his name? What am I looking to see happen? For them to sing more? What am I asking him? And then the last one is, who am I asking him to do this to? Why would I want him to do this? Why am I supposed to be passionate about asking him to do this? What's so great about his name anyway? How exactly does one go about hallowing it practically? And then who am I praying for him to do this to? Who am I telling him to go get? That's the last question. So the first one is this. Why would I ask him to do this? We covered this in other talks, so I won't belabor it here, but it's this. This is not a subjective deal. This is not, I think God is awesome, you think he's pretty good, and you know, it's his preference, whatever. That's not what's happening here. God is objectively the best thing in all of reality. That's an objective fact. It would be like if you were at a buddy's dorm and you saw him cleaning up and he takes a $100 bill and throws it in the trash, you would go, whoa, 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 what are you doing? He's like, I'm just trying to get some of this trash out of here. Bro, that's not trash. That's a $100 bill. Nah, it's just garbage. Get in the way. No, no, no. That's not garbage. It's $100. I don't care what you think it might be. It's $100. That can buy a number of goods and services. What are you doing there when you're saying that to him? Is you're trying to sync him up with reality. You're trying for him to get on board with what is. This is a valuable thing, and you need to appreciate it as such. You're failing to embrace an obvious reality that that's not garbage, that's valuable, and that's what you're doing to him, right? And it's for his good to do that, right? If you didn't love him, you would just be like, oh, you're right, I'll just throw it out for you, you know? But if you love him, you're saying, no, that's valuable, and you should embrace it, right? My sister and my brother-in-law are missionaries in Madagascar. And they will go to these villages you can only get to by helicopter or boat. And they will go out there. And whenever they arrive, they will see children literally dying from malnutrition. And what they've begun to do is they take seeds with them of the moringa tree. And they bring the seeds of this tree. And listen to this tree. Get a load of this. They walk into these cultures. This tree will grow 10 feet a year. And it thrives in arid conditions. And the leaves of this tree are edible. And listen to this. These leaves have more protein than an egg, 3 times more iron than spinach, 7 times more vitamin C than oranges, 4 times more vitamin A than carrots, 4 times more calcium than milk, 3 times more potassium than bananas. And on top of that, the oil can be extracted for fuel and the seeds can be ground up and used to purify water. This is a great tree. They call it the tree of life. Why? Because to these dying communities and these dying children, this tree will literally save their life. And yet they'll show up in a number of the communities and they say, this is the seed of the moringa tree. And they'll go, oh, no, we don't plant those here. And they'll go, what are you talking about? And they're like, witch doctor told us that those trees are taboo. They're no good. And they say, what they're having to do often is telling these people, no, no, it is good. It is an objectively good tree. And you need it. It will save your life and save your children. You need this tree. And they're praying, God, open their eyes so that they see the objective value of this tree that they need. And that's what we're praying. Why pray this? Because God is the most valuable thing in the universe. All things are made by him and for him. At his right hand are pleasures forevermore. He is the fountain of living water, is what Jeremiah will say. God is the best thing in the universe, and he's the most satisfying thing in the universe. So when you pray for God to do this to somebody, you're asking him, God, open their eyes so that they will see that which they were made for and that which will satisfy them. And that's the best prayer you can pray for somebody, that they would get to know what's best. If they put anything else in that ultimate position, they're ruining their life, missing their purpose, and they are lacking the love that is offered to them, and they are headed towards eternal perdition. It is not a good situation, and he is life, and he is best, and we're praying, let them open their eyes and get on board with reality and what is. That's what we're praying. God, let them see that you are joy and life. You're the best thing. Now, some of you say, well, Ben, I know this. I know I'm supposed to value God. I know I'm supposed to see God as great. And some of you go, well, Ben, I just don't feel it sometimes. My heart gets cold. I know I'm supposed to love God, and I see everybody else with their hands up, and I go, that's not me. And I guess I'm broken or something. And you get discouraged. Well, let me say this. Fire can't burn without fuel. You throw wood on it so that the fire can burn. Your affections for God can't burn without some fuel for it to burn off of. You need to load your mind with thoughts of who God is so that your affections can burn with a passion for him. Do you see that? So I won't go through everything about God. That would take a little bit more time than we have. But what's so great about his name? Let me give you a couple things. Exodus chapter 3, God sends Moses to Egypt. And Moses says, hey, when I show up and I'm going to tell him, hey, God says you're supposed to be free, who do I tell him sent you? Because everyone has these gods, and Moses is looking for a qualifier. Because all the other gods were like, oh yeah, I'm the god of this lake over here. Oh yeah, I'm a god of these people. Oh yeah, I'm a god of, you know, this kind of corn or something. There are all these little gods, and they were just sort of identified and limited by these things. And God says, no, see, that's not who you're talking to. Exodus 3, he says, you tell them I am. You tell them I am. That's who's talking to them. And there's a lot going into that sentence, but let me tell you one thing about God that will stagger your mind. He is self-existent. He has always been. Just spend tomorrow afternoon thinking about it. Go sit in Evans and think about the fact that he had no beginning. It staggers the mind. He's self-existent. There's untold wonder in that. He's totally free. Exodus 33, he told Moses, I will proclaim before you my name. And then he said, I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. Not only does he simply exist, he tells Moses, and I do whatever I want. God is totally free, and he's the only being who is. You're not. You have all kinds of limitations. And if you don't believe me, speed home tonight through College Station. You're gonna get pulled over, and you're gonna realize there's limitations on you legally. There's limitations on you physically. You can't leave here and go, you know what? I'm just gonna fly now, because that's how I roll, and then take off. You can't. You have limitations genetically. You have limitations in gifting and capacity. You have all manner of limitations and all manner of things that limit you in your options of what you can do. God has none. He's the only being that is completely self-determined and totally free. He says, I do whatever I want. And then number three, he told Moses in Exodus 6, I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty. That means not only can he choose to do whatever he wants, he has the power to pull it off. He is all powerful. Nothing can thwart any of his choices. God can't say, well, I was going to do that, and then, I don't know, like, it got kind of crazy around here, and some guy got in the way. He can't do that. I was watching a movie the other day, and there was this dad, and he leans down to his little girl, and he was like, I promise, nothing will ever hurt you. And I remember looking at that, and I'm like, he wants that to be true so bad, but he can't pull that off. And so if she sets all her hopes on that promise from her father, it'll fail her. That shaky ground, because he's just a man. This God is self-existent, self-determining, totally free, and all-powerful to pull it off. And so when he says he's going to do something, there's no competitors. No one's going to get in his way. He's not said, oh, I promised to do that, but then this guy and this thing, it's not going to work that way. And so this is your great ground of your assurance. If he says, I'll do it, and it's good news, you're in a good spot, because it will happen. Number four, he's merciful. He told Moses in Exodus 3, I am the Lord, God, merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands. What would you do if you had unlimited power? What would you do if you were suddenly given billions of dollars and power? What would you do? We just got cable and I'm watching it, and I'm telling you, there's stations on, there's channels on, and I've just thought numbers of times, and that's why the terrorists want to kill us. I watch a commercial the other day, and it's these hillbilly folks that suddenly get $1 million, and they're like, suddenly we're rich, and they're like, I'm gonna buy a tractor and wreck it, you know, and they're just like buying stuff and wrecking it and just drinking and getting them falling over, and I'm like, there's people all around the world with starving children, and they're watching you like, let's just burn the house, you want to? And they're like, I'm gonna kill that guy, you know, I mean, like, they... Because you had power, and what do you do with it? What would you do? Man, I'd buy a house. It would be sick. I would buy some cars. I'd get some clothes. You know, and God has all power. He does whatever he wants. And what does he say to do with it? I rule everything. There's no competitors. And you know what I'm going to do with my power? I'm going to be merciful and gracious. And my love's going to be steadfast. And it's going to extend out to thousands, millions across generations. The most powerful being that is, says all this power will be harnessed and put in the service of my love. Think about that sometime. That unshakable promise. A God of that power commits himself. That's why Paul wasn't nervous when he faced kings that said, I will kill you. He said, that does not matter what you think. Because he dwelt on this and it burned like a flame in him. God is the end of all things. He says, I'm the Alpha and the Omega. He's everyone's Omega. not just the religious people. Everybody's life will end when he says so, and they will face him, and they will either face him as a fountain of life or a lake of fire. He's everyone's omega. He's distinct. He said, I am the one whose name is holy, is what he told Isaiah. If a coin is valuable or a diamond, you separate it from all the rest and say, this one's special. God says, I'm the most special thing that is. And that's not bragging if it's true. He says, I'm the best thing out there. And he's jealous. Exodus 3, you shall worship no other God, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. Oprah heard that passage, and that's what made her punt Christianity. She said, when I heard God was jealous, I thought, that is so small. Your God is so small. And she ditched him because she misunderstood the text. He's jealous like a husband. I don't want my wife sleeping with other men. And that's not because I'm small and kind of petty. I don't want my little girl jumping in the car with some predator and say, you know, everyone's got to spend some time with her. No, I don't know you. And if you don't have her best interests in mind, I'm sorry. She comes with me. I'm jealous for her, and I'm jealous for my wife. That's what a loving leader does. And God says, hey, I get some people, I have all this power, and I gather people with it, and I love them. That's the kind of God I'm talking about. Can you get amped up about a God like that? You sit and dwell on any one of these. The name of a God who is powerful and loving and distinct and jealous. He's never ended. He never will. He never began. He always is. And yet he has come to me and said, but you call me dad. That is unreal. Think on that and see if your problems and anxieties don't get smaller in the light of his glory. So you hallow his name. How do you hallow it? Real quickly. There's a couple passages that tell you what hallowing his name looks like. Numbers chapter 20, verse 12. God tells Moses, as the people are thirsty and grumbling, he says, Moses, go speak to that rock, and I will let water pour out. Moses is impatient. He yells at the people and then beats on the rock. And God says to him, because you did not believe me to sanctify me in the eyes of the people, I'm going to punish you. And so God takes believe me and sanctify me and makes them synonyms. He says, Moses, I told you to speak, and you came and you were angry at them and yelled at them and beat things. That's not what I'm looking for. That dishonored me in front of them. If I had someone taking care of my dog and I said, hey, she's real obedient, just go out in the yard, call her name and she'll come to you. And they walk out in the yard and start screaming and kick the dog. I'd be like, what are you doing? She would dishonor me because they didn't listen to what I said on how to do it. I have students come to talk to me and they ask for my advice. And I'll give it to them. And I feel like it's good. I feel like it's biblical. And then I'll have some come back to me and say, hey, I need to meet with you again. And I'll say, okay, how did it go? What I told you to do? And they're like, oh, I didn't do any of that. I'm like, why do you want to meet me again? You think I'm going to say something different? And it's a little bit offensive to me that they heard what I said and went, nah, I'm not going to do that. They didn't believe me. You ever had someone call you a liar? It's offensive. If someone tells you what to do and you're like, that's dumb. You're like, it's not dumb. You get mad. And God says, Moses, I told you a way to do things and you didn't do it. You blew me off. And to blow me off, That doesn't honor me. You want to honor God, you do what he says. Hallowed be thy name means trusted be your word. You want to honor God, you believe what he says. You believe that when he says to do it a certain way, it's best. When he says to love your enemies and not seek revenge. When he says to not love money. When he says to forgive. You say, you know what? That doesn't seem most advantageous, but I'm going to do it. Trusting that you know how this place works. He told Isaiah, as the nation was cowering in fear of the other nations, he says, don't fear what they fear. Don't be in dread. The Lord of hosts, him you shall regard as holy. Him you shall fear. What is regarding God as holy? Hallowing him in Isaiah chapter 8? It is fearing him. It is I take him seriously. I fear him more than I fear anybody else. My little sister in high school was what do you call them at the front of the restaurant that seats you? Hostess at a restaurant. And it was a very successful restaurant in Houston. And let me tell you something. It was funny. When the owner came, it was a nice restaurant. But when he came, everybody was like, You know, I mean, they were just real, like, everything was perfectly clean and everyone was perfectly put together because there was this fear of this guy. And he wasn't a mean guy. It was just, he could fire you or promote you with a sweep of his hand. If you got good grades or did things the way he wanted, he would give you a bonus or extra money. I mean, this guy just had power. And so when he came in, he changed the gravity in the room. You know what I'm saying? And he had a policy. Nobody gets to cut in line. And there was typically a wait at this restaurant for 3-4 hours. And so this guy has this decree. Nobody gets ahead. I don't care who they are. But my sister said every night she'd get up there and some guy would be like, hey, we want to go ahead and sit now. And she was like, okay, you're number 478, you know, and hand him the deal. And the guy, and she said, guys would look at her and go, do you know who I am? You seat me right now and start big timing her. And they would put her in the situation where she was like, am I afraid of this grown man yelling at me enough to go seat him and violate my boss's will? And for her and all the other ones, they feared their boss much more than some red-faced yelling man. And all the time, they would be like, I'm sorry. God would be like, yeah, no, no. Or they'd hand him money. Hey, go ahead and seat me now. No, you keep that. This is 50 bucks. Yeah, I know that you're going to keep and get in line. You're number 478, you know. Go see a movie and come back. And the reality is, there was honor given to their boss because no one could bribe them and no one could threaten them to keep them from doing what they knew pleased him. He was too good a boss, too faithful a man, and too, they had too much reverence for him.
Right.
There were generals and leaders in World War II, Ralph Winters. Men would rather face the bullets of the enemy than let that guy down. That honors him. That's a way to honor somebody. Say, I'm not going to be afraid of anything. And yet I run into so many people that say, yeah, I want to honor God, but man, this company is so huge and they want me to fudge on my hours. And so what else can I do? Sorry, God. And I just got to put you away in my pocket because they're so big. And you go, you know what? They're not. Well, I want to honor God, but my fraternity or sorority is just so big, the pressure. You're like, I don't think God goes, you're right. They got 3 Greek letters and I can't handle that. And I'm not picking on the Greeks. We all do it. But let me tell you something. If you're a believer in Jesus and you fear something so much that you punt the truths of God, you send a message to the world. And you may sing, my God is greater, my God is stronger, my God's higher than any other, but what you just declared to the world is my God is helpless, my God is indifferent, and my God is unimportant. That's the song you sing to the world when you don't fear him. You want to honor God? You want to worship him? He says, you fear me. When I say do it, you do it. And come hell or high water, you keep marching forward because you fear me. You obey him. Leviticus 22, you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. You will not profane my name. I will be hallowed among the people. How is God honored? When you obey him. When you obey God, people will mock you and laugh at you. And then the more you do it and the more God shows up, they will come and start asking you questions about him. I promise you, it happens all the time. The person who is willing to walk with God will be like David. The whole army will laugh at him until you kill Goliath, and then they will come and ask you for a job.
Right?
Because you'll lead their country. And so you walk with God, and you'll honor him by obeying him. And the last one is you glorify him. He told Moses in Leviticus 10, this is what the Lord has said, I will show myself holy among those who are near me, and before all these people I will be glorified. He says, sanctifying my name is the same as glorifying me. Isaiah 29 says, they will sanctify my name, they will stand in awe of me. When I was in Florence, you know, I don't know if you've ever traveled in Europe, there's a lot of paintings. And at first, that romantic part of you takes over. You're like, oh, I'm going to look at works of arts and the Renaissance, you know, and you kind of walk around. And then after a while, watch them. You see all these college kids, and they're like, painting, 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 naked lady, Jesus, Mary, you know, and you're just kind of like, all right, okay, you know, and you just, there's so many of them, you just zoom past them all. And I got to a place where I was like, all right, and I'm just moving along. And then finally, I get to one, and it was the weirdest thing. I turned this corner, and there's this painting of the Holy Family by Michelangelo, and I was just like, ooh, and it was, the colors were so vibrant. And the people looked so real. They were sitting out on a lawn together, and it was like I was there with them. And I just stopped. And 3 different little tours went by,
and I couldn't move. And the people who were with me would come up, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm looking at this thing. And they would leave and come back, and what are you doing? I'm like, I'm looking at this thing. And I talked about it the rest of the time, and I bought the little magnet with a picture on it, and I bought all kinds of stuff because I was just arrested by this thing. I stood in awe of it. And let me tell you something. They all spent more time in front of it than they would have before. They all thought about it more. They all wanted to talk about it more. Why? Because they saw me standing in awe of it. You want to honor God? You want to sanctify Him? You want to hallow Him? You worship Him. You sing His praise. You stand in awe of Him. You carve out time on the campus to do nothing else but stand in awe of a holy God who controls the winds and the waves and rides the storm. So you want to, hallowed be thy name, believed be your word, feared be your displeasure, obeyed be your commands, glorified be your name. It's all the same thing. Last thing, who are we asking Him to do this to? We're asking Him to do it to us. God, make me a person who sees you more valuable than anything else, who believes you really are the satisfaction of my soul, and that you're worth selling everything. And then we pray it to others, because this prayer, hallowed be thy name, that's what it means to become a Christian. 2 Corinthians 4 says, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbeliever to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who's the image of God. What we proclaim is not us, but Jesus our Lord. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, shone into our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus. What is a Christian? It's not someone who obeys rules, believes doctrines. A Christian is someone who God has opened their eyes to see the glory of Jesus, that He was perfectly loving, that He was unafraid, that He was willing to step into this world and nobody could deter Him, and yet He was gentle with the weakest of us, that He committed no sin, and yet He became sin for us on the cross. He loved us enough to die for us. Nobody else loves you like that. And He beat death. Nobody beats death. Nobody has, except one guy. And He comes back and says, I own death, I own life, and I love you. And the Christian is the someone who God opens their eyes and says, I love that guy, and I'm his, and I want the whole world to see how holy is His name.
Welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. This is Jeremy, and I'm sitting here with Ben Stewart. And we are recording this the day after we had Breakaway in Rudder Auditorium, which is really cool because we go to Rudder and we have to do two breakaways just because they can't hold all of us at once. So you basically get two opportunities to share your talk.
That's true.
And then what we do is we pick our favorite one to share with everybody else.
And it was great, man, because typically the seven is a bit thin. And then in the past, we've had to turn people away at the nine, which we really didn't want to do that, and told our students that. And man, they rolled out. I mean, they filled up the seven.
Amazing.
And then the nine, we had some overflow space. And so it worked and it was awesome. So we love Rudder. We're happy we're going back to Reed. It'll make things easier. But I just loved, there was a lot to love about last night, but I just loved that we were all able to do it together.
I mean, let's be honest. Every breakaway we love. They're That's all true. Wonderful.
Yeah.
There's not a single breakaway that's not wonderful.
We're going to come in here. We really derailed last night.
I know, right?
Lord
willing, we haven't derailed yet. But want to say a special thank you to the over 2,300 people who came at 7 o'clock, which was a record for us.
Yeah.
That was just incredible. So thank you, 7 o'clock attenders.
Definitely.
Attendees.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we also were able to have Aaron Ivey back with us for the first time this new year,
always a pleasure.
2012. And they always do an amazing job. And they have a new worship CD that they just put out with their church, Austin Stone Live, and highly recommend it because they're leading songs that they've written over the last year, that Aaron's written, co-written with people, and that we've been singing at Breakaway for a couple semesters now. And it's just awesome that they've been able to resource the church with that. So
most definitely.
Highly recommend the Aaron Ivey guys, and Ben's iPad's going off right now, so
sorry.
That's okay. Because you've got good segue. You have notes on that iPad.
I do.
That you didn't really probably share last night, because you always come to the table with a few things that you have to cut.
Well, honestly, I should have cut more for the sake of time. I looked at the clock and was like, no problem, people. I only have 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 more points and we're done. I was like, what was I thinking?
Really?
This is a little over the top. Mm. Yeah, man. But but so we got most of it done. I have maybe one or two things, but.
Well, I'm loving this series, this focus around the Lord's Prayer. And last week, obviously, we started off with just our Father who art in heaven. Yeah. This week, hallowed be thy name.
Yeah.
Hallowed be your name. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people have heard a message like this, to be honest, growing up in the church maybe, or when you study it. I don't know if they've ever thought in the way that you presented it last night.
Hmm.
So I'm glad that you did. But is there anything you wanted to maybe shed some light on or clarify that would help us kind of on this part of the podcast?
I'd say a couple things. I mean, one, I meant to mention it last night and then I was concerned on time, so I started speeding through things. But I don't give a bibliography during the talk of every – I've read so many commentaries on the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. I have this stack of notes. But the interesting thing was when it came to this piece – hallowed be your name. They were pretty thin in terms of insights they're offering about it. So I went and read some notes of John Piper's on his website, and they were tremendous. And so the idea of tracing back through the Old Testament to see where does God mention his name and what does it show us about what he's like? And then where are the places in the Old Testament where he says, sanctify me or hallow me. And what are they doing to do that? So those kind of two points in the back were very much influenced by him. And so, again, I'm comfortable not saying every book I read, but when someone's heavily influenced your thinking on a text, it's good to mention that. And so I just was very indebted to Piper for his insights into that and found it really helpful for me. I'll say this too. Part of my drive for doing this is, you know, I remember a moment for me when I was in college where there was just a season of life where when I was walking on campus or something, it was hard for me to, I would tend towards discouraging thoughts, stress about the day or discouragement about not being all that I wanted to be or just thoughts that weren't super positive. And it was hard to get out of that. And you go, how do you get out of that? And for some people, they sing songs and that's good. I always had a hard time in those moments thinking of something to sing. And so I would just try to think through what passages do I know? And I'm just guessing there's people out there that when you're in a difficult situation, you go, man, it'd be nice to be able to quote thoughts from God and let them inform how I should be thinking and how I should be praying right now. But probably a lot of us out there, as much as we'd hate to say it, don't really have a lot of the Bible accessible in our minds. But everyone has the Lord's Prayer in their head.
Hmm.
And I think if we can honor Jesus's call to us to not repeat it meaninglessly, but really appreciate the meaning and use it as a launching pad into deeper conversation with God in a way that reflects his values, that becomes very powerful. And so I was just hoping to arm our students and you, whoever's listening, with that ability to walk and go, okay, I'm just going to do this. And to say each piece at a time and go, hallowed be your name. What am I asking for? Okay, I know what I'm doing. I'm asking him to do something. To who? To me? What do I really want him to do in my heart? To my friends? Which ones are on my heart? And suddenly it becomes a springboard for a 2-minute prayer, a 5-minute, a 20-minute, an hour. You see what I mean? So if I can help us get there, I'm passionate about that.
Hmm.
And for many of you, and this is my last thought, you know, some people think about this and they go, you know, I know we're supposed to praise God. And so they're kind of like, yes, God, you're awesome, whatever. But they don't feel it. And that's just, a lot of that is the struggle of being human. We can't control our feelings. Ultimately, God has to stir our affections. But you can position yourself to do that. You know, it doesn't honor my wife if I look at her and go, man, you're just so gorgeous. Just wow, you're stunning. You know, and she can tell I don't mean it. But if I can take some time and just stop and think about my wife and how she treats me and think about how she handles our daughter and think about the decisions she makes and all she's done to show love, I can get myself to a place where I can articulate some very sincere thoughts about my affections for her because I've stirred them through thinking. And so if you're one of those people that you're like, man, I just feel cold towards the Lord, tell him that and say, Lord, I want to love your name. But then really meditate on these things. Think about what he's like, because you preach yourself hot, is the way I heard one person say it. You give yourself the fuel to burn your affections off of. So you're not a victim, is what I'm saying. Some people go, I don't feel passion for the Lord, I guess. I don't know. Just wait till he just kind of zaps it in there. And you go, you can be actively waiting. Start loading your mind with thoughts of what he's like. And you'll find that you're putting out the logs and kindling and a match and paper. And you're just setting it all up for him to just light the spark. And it's all ready. And that's what you want to do with thoughts of the Almighty. So I hope this talk will be something they can go back and listen to and look up some of these verses and really meditate on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was my heart.
That's wonderful. Well,
yeah, man.
Thank you for sharing that. And I know people, if they want to go kind of do what you did through looking back over the name of God, going to desiringgod.org.
Yeah.
And they can do that through probably the website there.
Absolutely.
Okay. Very cool.
And it'll look familiar. I was like, man, that is so good. We're doing that.
That's great. Well, we get emails weekly just from people who either are asking questions or submitting requests. And one of the requests we got this week was, hey, can Ben share more of just like books he's reading and things that he's kind of looking at online to help him prepare for these talks? And so that's so helpful. Thank you for sharing that. And we love that we get to do this part. Hopefully it is encouraging to you guys listening. And we count it an honor and privilege to do this, throughout the school year. And so thanks for listening today.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Well, just that commentary thing. I think we have a list of commentaries on our website. It's not every one I use, but it's some good ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website, bestcommentaries.com. I just started going through it this year, and I realized I've had a list I compiled of all my what I felt were the best commentaries based on research I had done. And then I found this website, and we were totally synced up. I'm like, oh, man, some other guy already did it. I'm like, this is great. Hmm. So if you're looking for good commentaries, I would go to bestcommentaries.com because they really let you know what they are. So in terms of Matthew, D.A. Carson has been sort of my base one, and then I've launched out from him. So that's another one. But.
Very cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, thanks again, Ben, and thank you for listening. We are excited about being back in Read Arena next week, so we invite you guys to come out and join us at 9 o'clock in Read Arena, and we will see you soon.
See you there.